This is the one where they go to Skaro.
And meet the Daleks.
And the Thal.
Who are super hunky.
But they get captured.
Lots of times.
And convince the Thals to go to war.
For their own selfish purposes.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Dalek, Stalinood, and the Cybertronic race.
Some Taurans look like Taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. This is episode 2. I am Ponkin.
And I am Jack.
A.K.A. Flappy.
A.K.A. what was the other one?
Flapjack, Jackhammer,
whatever. Jackhammer, there we go. Just call me Jack.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever you say, Flappy. So, today we are discussing episode 002, of The Daleks, which is a long one.
And I've got to say, one of the best ones.
It is fantastic.
It is absolutely a brilliant one, and we meet a lot of characters who are going to become very important for the next 50 years.
Yeah, not the least being the titular aliens, the Daleks. First time we encounter the Daleks. Fantastic.
And much like the Doctor, just not to give too much away, the Daleks are not that much like present-day Daleks. As in, the Doctor's not much like the present-day Doctor, and the Daleks are not much like the present-day Daleks. They're nowhere near as evil.
They're nowhere near as evil, and they are obviously less technologically savvy, I guess.
Well, and they can't, like, at this stage, get upstairs. We overcame that one in, like, 2007.
Yeah, exactly. Nowadays, they can fly.
Like, it was somebody...
and they have Dalek puppets.
What was his name?
And
Mickey
things.
Was like, why don't we just go upstairs? They can't come up there. And then it started flying.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway. So, this is a 7-parter. Oh my god.
Yeah, it is.
It's going to take a while.
Yeah. Okay, let's get a pot of coffee on, people, and get discussing.
So basically, this episode starts exactly where the last episode ended. They arrive...
As everything seems to, actually, with this start.
So far, yeah.
It's all chronologically smashed in together.
Yeah, exactly. It's like watching 24.
Yeah, okay. It's actually it's the 24 of its day.
So basically, it starts off, part one of the Dead Planet. It starts off with the TARDIS arriving on the planet Skaro. We don't know yet that it's the planet Skaro.
But they look out. They look out the little teleporter thing, and there seems to be a dead forest around them.
Mm. And obviously, they go out.
Well, the Doctor's intrigued. Like the Doctor, like to be fair to him, like being a bit like today's Doctor, he's always intrigued.
Yeah,
he is an intrigued.
Oh, he's
person.
Super interested in taking samples and having a look around, and especially since he still doesn't seem to know exactly where they are.
No,
yeah, because the TARDIS is not functioning incredibly properly.
Well, and he's not very good at working it either.
Yeah, it seems like it, right?
Yeah. He doesn't really know what he's doing, and it's broken.
Well, he
knows, not a good combo.
He knows enough to sabotage it, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So, just like the last episode ended, they go out, and immediately thereupon, we see the Geiger counter, basically, indicating that it is insanely radiated.
Except that they don't notice that it's saying that it's insanely radiated. They look at it for about 3 seconds, decide it's perfectly safe. And, like, 1 second after they turn around, it says, you're going to die. It's so radiated.
Yeah, it basically goes from, like, these are acceptable levels to your skin will melt.
Again, another sort of reflection of the fact the Doctor doesn't know his TARDIS very well. Because if he did, he'd have said, oh, no, like, hold on, Susan. You need to give it, like, 10 seconds, because otherwise you won't get an accurate reading, which is obviously what happens.
Yeah.
Like anything, it needs a bit of time to warm up. If you put a thermometer in your mouth, like, it doesn't work after 2 seconds. You need to leave it in there for a bit to get an accurate count.
Yeah.
But the Doctor seems to not realise this.
No.
Because he's a bit retarded.
Yeah, and he's too curious about the surroundings. So they go out, they find themselves in a forest that is entirely dead. I mean, everything is just ashen. Or, what? Turned to stone.
Yeah, stone. It's stone.
That's what
like.
It is. Yeah.
It's less ash, more stone.
More stone. Less ash, more stone.
Yeah.
Which, more
which they never actually completely explain, but we'll get on to that. Why is it stone? Like, nobody really knows.
Everything is petrified, but except one flower.
Especially Susan.
Everything is petrified except one flower.
Yeah.
I take that back. It is petrified as well, but it is perfectly intact. Susan picks up this flower.
It's actually a light bulb.
It's totally a light bulb.
It is obviously a light bulb.
She's like, oh, look, I found a flower. Ian holds it in his hands, at which point freaking Barbara screams off screen.
Yeah.
And he crushes said light bulb
in
his hands.
For no apparent reason. He could, like, if he was really panicked, he could have just dropped it, but no. He takes the light bulb and smashes it into Susan's hand.
Yeah.
Which on set must have been actually quite dangerous. Like, that glass must have splintered everywhere. And we're talking about a young girl here. I mean, if we're to believe she was like 16, 17, like, you shouldn't be allowed to do that. You shouldn't be able to smash glass in her hands.
Uncool, Ian. Uncool. Anyway, so, wait, hang on. Before we go on with the plot, here's what I wanted to tell you before. This episode was written by Terry Nation, who created the Daleks, right? Terry Nation also created another sci-fi show that I watched as a kid, Blake 7. He created Blake 7,
dude. I know. You said. Like,
it's pretty rad.
Depending on how you feel about Blake 7.
Wait, hang on. He also wrote, I don't know if he wrote the exact episode, but he also wrote for MacGyver. And I remember, and I in fact actually have this episode. Spoiler alert, this is going to be a bonus episode at some point. There's an episode of MacGyver in which there are very, very Dalek-like robots. We're going to go through that. That episode was clearly inspired by this.
I look forward to that.
Perhaps even written by Terry Nation, who knows? Anyway, so moving on. Barbara Screen's...
He's a bit of a one-trick pony.
Yeah,
he only has Daleks. Even in present-day MacGyver land, he only has Daleks. Anyway. So, where were we? Oh, yeah, smashed light bulb.
Yeah, Barbara screams because she's found some sort of monster or creature.
Some sort of metal monster.
Yeah, it turns out it's actually made out of metal, except it's...
Well, Ian thinks it's made out of stone. And, like, because he looked at it and decides that it's made out of stone, he thinks he can just touch it and, generally put his face in there.
Oh, not just that. He touches it and still goes, oh, it's made out of stone. And then the doctor looks at it and goes, no, you're very much mistaken. This is made out of metal. It's like, wait, hang on, you fucking touched it, dude. Couldn't you have told?
Generally, I have respect for Ian. How the hell? Because he taps it. He does a little... How does he not know that it's not stone from doing
exactly.
That? Stone has a very particular feeling to it.
Yeah, it has particular resonance.
Actually, it made a sound. The BBC sounds department actually put like a metal sound.
Yeah, like
in
a
there.
Tinny, echoey type sound. But so it...
And he still thought it was stone.
Yeah, but somehow they also explain, this effed me off as well when I saw this. It is a metal creature that used to be alive, but is now dead and petrified.
Well,
it is a metal creature that has turned to stone.
Yeah, but they never quite explain what that creature is.
No.
But because we're on the planet of the Daleks, and obviously we know the Daleks have a metal exterior and they live inside, maybe the creature was the same.
That's very possible. I was actually kind of thinking at the time, like, oh, is this some sort of drone that they sent out at some point?
It could be a Dalek creation. We don't know. We never told.
Yeah, in fact, this monster, this creature, is never revisited throughout the whole 7-episode arc.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Terry. So, then they see a city in the distance.
Yes.
Yeah. And the doctor really wants to explore the city. The others go, well, let's not.
And Ian very sensibly says, well, we're on an alien planet. Like, the likelihood is if we go down into the city, we'll die somehow. I'm with a young woman here. I'm with a girl and like a doddery old man.
Yeah, whom I don't care about.
Yeah, who's trying to kill me and has kidnapped me.
Yeah.
Seriously, can we just go?
Yeah. And the doctor basically goes, you know what? That's fine. Let's do it.
Screw you guys. I'm going.
Yeah.
That's what he says. Screw you guys. I'm going down to the city.
Yeah, and maybe Ian, not verbatim, but yeah.
Ian, the man that he is, steps up and he's just like, I will not allow it. He actually, like, physically threatens the doctor.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm not going to allow you to go. We need you to run the ship.
Yeah.
You bastard. And he really is a bastard.
He's such a bastard. So they go back to the TARDIS. Correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, wait, hang on. So on the way back to the TARDIS, everyone's in the TARDIS except Susan, who's just kind of wandering around the forest at this point. But then suddenly someone...
I think Susan's in the group, but she's like at the back.
Okay, yeah, so she's behind everyone else. And then suddenly something touches her shoulder.
And we see that it's a hand.
It's a hand. It's totally
like
a human hand.
Yeah.
And she screams... runs to the TARDIS, no one believes her.
Goes in and like the doctor's just like, you're hysterical, girl. And Ian's like, yes, sometimes children get very worked up, don't they? And she's like, a hand touched me on the back. What's so unbelievable about that? And they're like, oh, don't be silly.
Yeah. It's like, wait. How did you decide that it was silly? You're on an alien planet. You just saw some sort of strange metallic creature.
You
know
nothing about this place. Yeah. And you're telling me that I am literally making it up.
And then Susan has a good cry to Barbara, who secretly doesn't give a shit.
Like, it could have been anything. It might not have been a hand. It might have been, like, a living tree poking her in the back.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
Yeah, we don't know.
A Dalek plunger. Who knows? But they don't even, like, come up with alternative explanations. They're just like, you literally made it up.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. You're mistaken, girl.
Yeah.
So... here's what I was
like in horror
before,
stories, like, you know, in like any given horror movie, and there's like a child, and he's like comes into his parents' room, and he's like, "Daddy, I heard something out the window. It sounded like some sort of monster screaming and howling." And he's like, "Oh, come now, it's just the wind." Like that's the start of every horror story,
yeah,
essentially, and it's the start of this one.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So hang on, correct me if I'm wrong. When they get back to the TARDIS, do they wait until the following morning?
No, I think pretty much immediately. The doctor says, like,
I'll
Ian
take
convinces
you back
the,
home.
The doctor, convinces the doctor, yes, let's go.
Yeah.
And the doctor's like,
sure.
I'll get right on that.
Yeah. And then basically sabotages the TARDIS so that it won't work.
Removes the mercury fuel system or whatever.
The liquid mercury converter wibbly wobbly thing.
Yeah.
Tries to operate the TARDIS. The TARDIS obviously rejects it.
Yeah.
And it goes, yeah, we need mercury to...
run the ship. Oh, damn it. We're going to have to go into the city.
Yeah. Where,
sniggering.
Yeah. Where, by the way, wait, hang on. Why would there be mercury in this city?
Well, like, we have no idea what kind of race lives here. I mean, if it was like a proper city,
there's
some meds.
Well, not just that. They go like, yeah, there's probably a lab down there somewhere where we can steal some mercury. Why would there be a lab?
Why would there necessarily... There is a lab, but what would there be?
With equipment that shows English dials, but it doesn't matter. Why would there be a lab? Why would there be mercury?
Yeah.
It's oh my god, like, why would you assume that? But they do, obviously.
Turns out they're right.
Yeah, they're totally right. So they get back out of the TARDIS and...
go to the city.
Yeah, but before, outside the TARDIS, they find a little metal box which are four vials of some sort of liquid.
Yeah.
They don't go, let's see what this is, or I wonder who left it here.
Yeah.
Susan goes like, yeah, I told you there was someone out here. And they're like, you know what, we still don't believe you.
Yeah, they were still like, oh no, that was probably left there 1,000 years ago. Come, Susan, you're so stupid.
Yeah, and instead of like thinking, okay, we don't know what these vials are, perhaps they're part of some sort of alien bomb, perhaps it's fucking ricin, we have no idea. Mm-hmm. Susan, put them in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Let's
could be
go
like
find...
corrosive acid.
Yeah.
Corrosive time acid. It just like envelops everything in a wormhole. No idea. Absolutely no idea at all.
She puts them back in the TARDIS. They leave sans vials and go to the city. Once at the city, okay, thank you so much, Ian. Cue the let's split up and meet back here in 10 minutes trope. Because that's exactly what Ian says. And they split up very evenly, with Barbara going in one direction, everyone else going in another.
Yeah. Barbara, of course, being the most useless of the group. For some reason, she is a one-man army, and she is sent off alone. Ian, the actual only big, strong guy, who's like actually of any use whatsoever, takes two people with him. All silliness aside, in terms of determining groups, honest mistake, Barbara is captured.
Yeah.
We don't know by who, but a door comes down behind her and she's captured in what appears to be some sort of cell.
Yeah, well, like she walks around all these corridors with fantastic, like, panel drawings of corridors.
Yeah.
Great.
That is great.
Wonderful set extensions.
Seriously.
That are literally just painted on the wall.
Like, I find it unlikely that you won't watch the Doctor Who episodes, people out there in podcast land, and will just listen to us drone on about them.
Well, they might.
But, no, seriously, if you're going to look at one thing, look at that scene.
Yeah.
It's incredible. The drawings of hallways. And there's a mirror. There's a mirror somewhere to make the hallways look longer.
Totally.
Yeah, but it's obviously a mirror, right? You can see the frame.
Yeah.
Amazing. Do watch.
It's fantastic. But, like, okay, all kidding aside, this is a great episode. These seven episodes are a great story.
Anyway, so that's where it ends. Basically, you see a plunger.
Yeah. Doors come down, she's locked in some sort of lift, it goes super, super far down, and when it arrives at the bottom, there's a plunger approaching her. Boom. Cue episode 2, which is called The Survivors. Okay, so, the three, Susan, Ian, the Doctor, they come back 10 minutes later and find that Barbara isn't around.
Yeah, like, oh shit, where's Barbara gone?
Yeah, oh, shouldn't have installed that trope.
Yeah.
So, Ian goes, well, let's go find her. So they also get captured. Turns out there are Daleks everywhere. Oh, wait, first they find the lab.
Yeah. So what do they find in the lab? They find a radiation counter.
Yeah, a Geiger counter. Susan actually refers
saying, we are dying from radiation poisoning.
Yeah. The Dalek, the alien Dalek Geiger counter on the planet Skaro in the year Lord knows what.
In English.
Is showing a setting of, and I quote, danger.
Don't forget the TARDIS translates things. Told us that yet, but maybe the TARDIS is translating.
No, I made that note. It's like everything is in English. The Thal speak English. Oh, we haven't even gotten to the Thal yet. Yeah. The Daleks speak English. Everyone speaks English. The TARDIS does not have like its built-in translation matrix that it does today.
Well, maybe it does. It's just unexplained. Like, maybe they looked at these early episodes, because we haven't seen everything yet, have we?
That's true.
It might come later, and they're like, oh, shit, how do we explain the fact everything's in English and everyone is English? I've got it.
Let's throw in a Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, and like, mid-Tom Baker, they're just like, oh, wait. There has always been a translation matrix. Yeah, that covers it. Okay.
Anyway, moving on.
Let's just take that as a given.
So they're in the lab. Not only do they find out that it's incredibly dangerous to basically be alive on this planet, the doctor also admits that he had Mercury all along. There was nothing wrong with the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And he was just curious about the city.
So, confirming again, he's a bastard.
Yeah, and when they leave the lab, they're surrounded by Daleks. They get captured, put in a cell alongside Barbara.
Yeah.
Oh, and Ian is temporarily... disabled.
They shoot Ian.
Yeah, they shoot Ian. He's paralyzed from the waist down.
Yeah.
Still an alpha male, though. I don't give a crap.
He's still strong. He's still, like, strong-minded. Oh, and totally. Keeps a very stiff upper lip.
Yeah.
But anyway, like, essentially, at this point, they're all dying. The doctor's on the floor. He's practically unconscious.
Yeah.
Barbara's going, like,
She's
weak and going quite bad. Ian's all right, but like, he's sweating a bit. But yeah. He's all right, but he's paralyzed from the waist down.
Yeah,
the only one who's okay is Susan.
Yeah, but the Daleks interrogate the Doctor, assuming that he is the other race that lives on the planet, who are the Thal.
Just to be fair, he looks exactly like a Thal.
Oh, the Thal are just human.
Apart from he's not big and hot.
Yeah. So
he's little and hairy.
The Daleks and the Thal, it turns out, have been waging this nuclear war for like 500 years. And they had a nuclear war.
They haven't seen each other for like 500 years.
Yeah, basically, but they know that they're still around.
Yeah.
And the Daleks somehow know that the Thal have developed this sort of anti-radiation serum, which clearly was what was in the vials in the first place. So the Doctor goes, the Daleks go, we want the serum to survive because they've been badly mutated by the radiation.
Yeah, give us your radiation, like...
Serum
thing. Or whatever. And they're like, well, we haven't got any. Ah, that stuff back in the ship. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Send one of us to go there and we'll pick it up and come back with it.
So the only one who's like fully capacitated is Susan.
Exactly. She goes there.
Yeah. I mean, she's a bit screamy on the way back, but she does quite well.
Like, yeah.
Like, she makes it. She makes it all the way there.
She gets there. She gets the vials.
And then she has a doctor moment.
Yes.
Being the granddaughter of the Doctor, she realises, oh, yeah, I'm meant to be a bastard. And it crosses her mind, shit, I could just leave them there. Like, I'm perfectly safe in the TARDIS. Why don't I just fuck off?
It's not really presented that way, but she clearly spends too much time before she heads back.
She really thinks about leaving.
Mm.
She is the Doctor's granddaughter. Like, all for her.
Yeah.
Entirely selfish.
It's in her genes.
Yeah. Like, probably the only reason she decided to go back is that she wouldn't survive on her own.
Yeah.
It's in her genes to be a bitch.
The TARDIS doors open again. She's got the little vials. She leaves. End of episode 2.
Yeah.
Episode 3. The Escape.
Yeah. So the first thing we see, like, as they all do, it leads on, and she meets, what's his name? Avalon? Hunk number one.
Yeah, hunk number one, the main hunk of the Thal.
A really tall, really well-built, Scandinavian-looking Thal.
Yeah. All the Thal, by the way, are fantastically attractive. They're all blonde.
They're incredibly beautiful people.
They're in very good shape.
Yeah. And they're really, really nice.
Yeah, they're very nice. And
like, unbelievably nice. Like, they'd sacrifice themselves for you.
And I think
they're very good-looking nude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not just that. Like, they seem to have developed a certain, well, I don't know, a range of clothing that does nothing but emphasize their beauty. So,
and thinking about it, they're also extremely flirtatious.
Yeah, oh,
they're
totally.
They're all very
flirtatious. Oh my God. Yeah. The guys are all hunks. The women are all wearing swimsuits.
Blonde bombshells in swimsuits.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Hunk number one tells Susan, are you cold? Here, take my cloak, which will come into the story
later.
We'll
mention this later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gives her his cloak and goes, okay, here's an extra box of serum in case the Dalek take this box. So here's like a backup.
Yeah.
She takes both, heads back to the city. The Dalek, as predicted, take the serum, but she's got the backup, rescues everyone. So they're, well, saves everyone. So they're now very much alive. Mm. What happens next?
So, at this point, the Daleks come to Susan. They're hatching a little plan.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, 347's talking to 348. They're like,
347.
We must play a trick on the Thal.
How do we get them to do that?
Okay. And basically, they get Susan to write a letter.
Yeah, because essentially, they have no hands. They cannot write letters. So, we're like, how do we write a letter? Oh, get one of the people to do it.
The young, weak one will suffice.
And she has beautiful penmanship.
Yeah, she does, actually.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, lovely.
And she writes a letter saying,
Cursive.
Like, the Daleks will give you food.
Yeah.
And want to discuss peace, basically.
Yeah.
They want peace between the two
people. So come into the city, we'll all meet up, we'll leave some food outside for you, and we'll go in and we'll hold peace discussions.
Yeah.
And Susan actually believes the Daleks, and we don't have any reason to distrust the Daleks. Well, we do, but Susan doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so the Thal's completely for this.
Yeah, they get the thing, the Thal leader.
Who's such a good guy.
He's such a nice dude.
Yeah.
He brings some of his, like, main hunks with him to the city. Oh, wait, hang on.
They're all hunks. It says nothing to say he brings hunks to the city.
Well, some of his main hunks. He's like, they're like his main guys.
Yeah,
main hunks.
A couple of the leader hunks.
Yeah, yeah. So, some of the main hunks, and the leader hunk.
Actually, leader's not that hot. He's a bit older. Like, you could tell he was hot when he was, like, younger, but he's...
Oh, he's still in good shape.
Oh, yeah. Like he's a really buff 45-year-old.
Oh, he's older than 45.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
This was the 60s, though. People looked older.
By the way, they're basically wearing the same get-up as, like, original Star Trek Khan.
Yeah.
Like, they have the massive cleavage.
Yeah.
But they're hairless. They're all, like, perfectly hairless.
Yeah.
These dudes are...
Well-groomed.
They're well-groomed. They are manscaped. So, while they're heading to the city, the group, they try to escape. And they figure out that the Daleks run on static electricity. And, wow, great coincidence. It turns out the cloak that Hunk number one gave Susan somehow isolates static electricity, so...
Which is never explained. So they never actually say, oh, this is a relic. Because it'd make a lot of sense. If this was a relic from Thal civilization from 500 years ago, they started wearing these cloaks as like a traditional thing, but also to guard against the Daleks.
Yeah.
And they're still wearing it today. They don't know what it's for.
No, that's never said.
Is what should have been said.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I was missing that element.
Yeah.
So anyway, they hatch a plan, and the idea is basically, okay, so Ian destroys the CCTV camera inside the cell.
Yeah.
The Daleks do not fall for this, by the way. They're
well,
like,
they
wow,
do. They do fall for it. They're standing outside, and they're just like, he definitely broke that. He definitely broke that on purpose.
Yeah, let's go in anyway. Send in 347.
What should we do about it? Let's send in 347 to talk to them, and then do nothing.
We don't like 347. His plunger is shorter than everyone else's.
But 347 does nothing to them. Like, doesn't he give them water or something?
Yeah, he gives them water and food. And then backs out slowly.
Yeah, doesn't replace the camera. Doesn't even ask about the camera.
No.
It's like they've let the camera thing go.
Like, 347, did you ask about the camera? Why did you not ask about the camera? We gave you one job to do.
He's so useless. Well, 347's going to come in handy later.
Oh, my God.
Well, like, immediately now.
Yeah,
so
he backs back out. They go, we didn't fix things. Wait, hang on. Do they not try to, like, prop open the door?
They do. That is their original plan. Ian hides behind the door. and he wants to prop it open.
I think that's what they do. They try to prop open the door. It fails. He's not named 347. Let's call him 347 for argument's sake. 347 notices that the door is propped open, probably thinks to himself, this is very strange, opens the door again and goes back into the cell, at which point they have basically a hoedown with the Daleks.
Yeah, they basically roundhouse him. The Doctor grabs, his shooty thing. Susan grabs the plunger.
Ian grabs the plunger, but is then plunged into the wall. Yeah,
but then they roll it on top of the cape.
Yeah, which knocks it cold.
Which knocks it cold. I mean, the Doctor did work this one out. Be fair to the Doctor. He was static. They're running on static electricity, obviously. Hmm. So all we need to do is get it off the floor.
Obviously.
All we need to do is get it off the floor.
Yeah.
We have a cloak.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. And the cloak is the perfect texture, the perfect microfiber texture.
It somehow
does not
conduct electricity. They have figured this out.
Yeah. Even though it looks like it's nylon and would probably make the static electricity.
It's super shiny and
much,
it's got
much
these strange panels on them that look very metallic. But maybe ceramic or something.
It looks as though it would supercharge a Dalek.
This guy would plunge like he's never plunged before.
Yeah, that's right.
But it knocks him cold. While the girls are looking away, the Doc and Ian unscrew the top of the Dalek. And, we never see the Dalek inside.
Yeah, they do a good job of hiding it.
Yeah, actually. Inside a whatever.
But it's clearly something quite small that they can hold in their hands.
Yeah, and that is gross. They say that looked terrible.
And they place it in the corner.
Yeah.
And,
at which point, Ian
gets inside.
He gets inside the Dalek. Let's just take a moment to ponder the logistics of a Dalek. Because what they took out was
hand size.
Yeah,
it was hand size. It fit in your hand.
It looked like Wilson from Castaway.
Yet, there was space.
For an entire Ian. For an entire
Ian.
Science
huge
professor.
Guy. For a science, a huge alpha male man.
And his cardi inside this Dalek.
It's never even suggested that they take the smallest of them, Susan, and put her in there.
No.
There's obviously enough space for Ian.
Oh, totally.
This is bad design by the Dalek, surely. Why? They're not utilising
the
space.
The poor little round Dalek is hanging by his life to the top of the Dalek.
Exactly. And below him and above him, there's just space. They're not utilising that at all. They could use that for, to supercharge. They could have a battery, couldn't they?
Yeah.
They wouldn't need the static at all. There's space for a huge lithium-ion battery.
Anyway, so Ian gets inside the Dalek. They don't know how to operate it just yet. So the Doctor, pushes it along, and Ian, inside the Dalek, pretends to hold Susan and Barbara hostage.
Yeah.
And then, basically end episode 3.
Yeah.
We're now at episode 4, called The Ambush, which starts off with Ian miraculously figuring out how to operate the Dalek.
And not only that, he doesn't work out how to do each thing one by one. He's hang on, I've got it. And, basically starts being able to walk on his own, then starts moving the plunger, then is so good with the plunger 10 seconds later that he can actually direct Susan in certain directions and push her up against another Dalek.
Oh, it's amazing.
Super dexterous.
Oh yeah, totally. Wait, spoiler alert, there's another Dalek.
Sorry.
He's also talking whilst inside the Dalek machinery. He's speaking like a Dalek. So he's basically going 347 and then
I have 347, I am taking them to the control area.
Another Dalek shows up, where are you taking them? He's we are taking them to the controller. I must confirm this with the controller. At which point Susan has the brilliant idea to jump up and try to attack the other Dalek. And she even winks at the Doctor.
Smiles and winks.
Smiles and winks.
As if, rather than being in the perilous situation they are, that this is all a joke.
Yeah, she's like, what fun.
Anyway,
because Ian inside the Dalek machinery wibbly wobbly thing also pushes up against her and in a non-sexual way, in a non-pervy way, pushes up against her and
that would be terrible.
Yeah, holds her down, the real Dalek assumes that it's all legit and goes, yes, you may go into the lift and go to the controller. They go into the other room or whatever. Close the door, at which point, for some reason...
Well, they decide they want to escape.
Yeah, the whole thing is an escape.
Well, they see a lift.
They see a lift.
That takes them up.
Yeah, but before then, the other Daleks, they like he tries to confirm it with like headquarters, and they're like 347, you are a fucking idiot.
Yeah, they realize that. Yeah, 347. No, it's not 347. 347 is the one that Ian's inside, in not a sexual way. Again,
348, you are just as good as your cousin.
Basically, they're locked inside a room. The Daleks are outside.
Yeah,
and they've realized the game.
Right. Yeah.
The game is up.
So they try to, like, melt the door. Very Star Warsy, by the way. Yeah. Like, they start...
Well, Star Warsy copied...
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
This pre-date
totally. It looks exactly like... Well, basically, it looks like the shitty Episode 1 thing where they throw a lightsaber into a door and, like, slowly melt around it.
Yeah. Like, it's super slow.
Yeah.
And it looks like super thin metal, so it can't be a very good plunger or whatever they're trying to do it with.
Ian can't get out of the Dalek. He's still stuck inside 347.
Well, because what happens is they demagnetize the floor, because they realize what's happening. They demagnetize the floor or desatify the floor. So the Dalek can't move. Yeah, Dalek can't move. Because they talk about wheeling him into the lift. They can't even do that.
Oh, yeah.
The wheels won't move. And he can't get out of the Dalek.
Yeah, he's stuck in there.
He is screwed.
Yeah, he's totally boned. So they get into the lift, head upstairs while he
is. Again, the Doctor is like, no, we must let him die to preserve ourselves. Like, and the girls are like, no, we can't do that. Like, that's our friend. And he's like, there's no time. We must get in the lift. Like, Ian being the good guy, he's like, no, I think he's right on this one. You've got to get in the lift. I'll fend for myself.
He's such a dude.
He is awesome.
So, Ian's stuck in the Dalek. They're heading up the lift. The real Daleks are getting into the room.
Yeah.
They get in. They blast the shit out of 347. Transpires.
347 shell.
Yeah. Transpires. Ian got out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did really well. Got in the lift. Like, yeah. He makes it up there with the Doctor and the others.
Yeah. And while the real Daleks are also heading up the lift, they look out the window and see the Thal approaching.
Yeah. So they've obviously been taken in by the scheme and they're coming to get the food and make this.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're naive and beautiful.
Oh, lovely. Lovely, lovely people. They want to believe the best about the Daleks.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, we've distrusted them for 500 years, but this letter is so beautifully written, we must assume it is peaceful.
Long story short, they're obviously worried about the Daleks coming up in the lift, so they throw
an enormous
carved stone.
An enormous tetrahedron stone. Basically just push it down the lift shaft.
Yeah.
Very, very John McClaney, by the way. Totally John McClane.
Which does hold them up, and they manage to make good their escape into another room.
Yeah. While the Doctor goes, let's go back to the TARDIS, Ian goes...
Let's go back to the TARDIS and fuck off. Yeah. I cannot be doing with this. And Ian's like, those really nice Thals are going to die. And he's like, fuck the Thals. We've got our own problems. And Ian basically refuses. He's just like, look, there's some innocent, lovely, hunky people who are going to die here.
Wait, like, Ian's not seen a Thal yet.
Okay.
But the Doctor just goes, wait, they've got problems, I've got problems. So,
screw them, fuck you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah, Ian, however, stays behind, goes to, like, the main entrance, where he sees the Thal come in. There are, like, all these beautifully round blocks of Swiss cheese lying around the place.
And the leader Thal gives a lovely speech to the Daleks, where he preaches peace and harmony.
Yeah, he's like, I always knew that I would see this in my lifetime. I prayed that we would find peace between our people.
He's almost crying, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, it's an ambush.
The ambush.
And, yeah, they kill a lot of the Thal.
Well, they kill all of them, don't they?
No, they kill the leader.
They kill the leader and...
They kill Hunk number one.
No, Hunk number one survives.
A few of them get away.
Yeah, what?
Because Ian warns them. He shouts out, it's a trick! It's a trick! So he manages to save a few Thals that way.
Yeah.
So now they love Ian.
Exactly. They come back to the TARDIS.
And don't hold it against the Doctor.
No,
didn't ask questions. They're so nice, they didn't even ask questions. Why did that brick run away?
So they get back to the TARDIS where all the Thal are. And they're like, okay, let's head back home. But transpires, Ian no longer has the Mercury conductor thingy.
Yeah, the Daleks got it somehow.
Yeah, the Daleks took it during the whole incarceration thing.
Yes.
And they're now going to have to go back to the city to retrieve the Mercury thingy and in order to get back home.
Yeah, because even when they get back to the camp, the Doctor's still like, seriously, we've got to fuck off. Those Daleks are coming. We have got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, but what about the Thal? And again, he's like, fuck the Thal.
In fact, he even like emphasizes Ian's incompetence yeah. in having lost the Mercury thing to the Daleks. He's like, how could you lose it?
But anyway, so they're all there. Like, the Doctor only gets on board with staying because he can't leave.
Yeah. End of episode. Yeah. Yeah. Cue episode 5, the expedition.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, they split up into groups.
Yeah.
They are.
So one group is a bunch of Thal women.
Yeah.
Who are actually pretty good. And they're, what they need to do is try and take out the Dalek cameras so the Daleks can't see anymore.
Exactly.
So they're going to reflect with those glass things.
Yeah, they've got like mirrors. Somehow they have mirrors.
Into the eyes of the Daleks.
Not into the eyes, into the CCTV cameras.
CCTV.
Yeah.
The other group,
yeah.
who is composed of everyone else, essentially.
Yeah. The Doctor, Susan, Barbara, Hunk number one, Hunk number three,
and Hunk number two. All the hunks.
Are there. By the way, just to clarify, Hunk number one is Hunk number one. Hunk number two is like some other hunk. And Hunk number three
pussy hunk.
Is a guy who's a complete wimp.
He's a pussy.
He's a total pussy. But we're going to get to that. So their plan is to go into the city, but...
They have to go through the mountains.
They have to go through the mountains, through a swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is populated by all manner of weird creatures.
Yeah.
And
from there, I mean, they don't know they're going to do it yet, but they tunnel in.
They tunnel in. Or, like, there are tunnels, and they're going to go through the tunnel. Or, like, they're like tunnels and pipes.
They're working it out as they go.
Yeah,
but
basically.
Essentially, they need to go through the mountains, then find a way into the city.
Yeah, because there's, like, some sort of strange hydration system. Like, something that pumps water into the city.
So, basically.
They're going to go through that.
But first of all, they have to go through the mountains. And essentially, it's a really long way.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to hunker down overnight.
Yeah, no pun intended.
There's a whirlpool of Angel Delight.
Yeah.
Or custard.
Wait. Dude. Oh, you're getting ahead of this. So, it's a long trek, so they decide to camp out, have a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. Lovely picnic. They've got, like, little paper cups and everything.
They're not paper. They're, like, plastic.
Okay.
Like, little plastic cups.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
Like, the Thal have got nothing, but they managed to manufacture plastic cups for a picnic.
Yeah, let alone clothes. I believe you pointed this out before.
Leather trousers, no cows.
Leather trousers. One of the dudes has like a leather satchel, but there are no cows. There's like nothing to produce this from. But
in fact,
okay.
They're on a barren land. They can't grow anything.
Dude, everything is petrified.
Yeah, everything is stone. And yet somehow they're all wearing leather trousers.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so after the picnic, the Thal go, "Hey, you all. Have a nap. Let's rest here. We'll keep one Thal on guard." But that Thal decides to go down to, like, a little lake.
Yeah, which is actually custard.
Which ends up turning into a custard whirlpool that engulfs him.
Yeah, it never actually shows us.
No.
I mean, we looked at the little clip of how he dies as a result of the custard whirlpool.
It is the most pathetic movie death ever.
Well, basically, they just show some swirling custard. He goes, falls over, and, like, seems to not be able to move, and then he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. He could very happily have walked away from there leisurely.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He just remains on the bank of this little lake thing.
Well, it's not as if the custard whirlpool's coming towards him.
No. He's in the water. He's on land. It's a whirlpool.
He looks at it and it gets him.
Emphasis
somehow.
On the pool bit.
Yeah.
But he's on land. Still, he dies. So they go to the whirlpool because they hear him screaming. They find all his stuff and his leather satchel floating around in the pool. They go, oh no, the pool got him.
Yeah.
Death by whirlpool. And too bad, let's move on.
Yeah.
At which point, they kind of split up again.
Yeah.
So, what?
So, it becomes Group 2A and Group 2B.
Yeah. 2A.
2A is composed solely of the Doctor and Susan.
And one more Thal.
Oh, and one. What number Thal is that?
Hunk 2.
Hunk number 2.
This is Hunk number 2.
That is Hunk Thal number 2.
Yeah.
Susan and the Doctor.
Because they figured out that, okay, so there is CCTV, but it must run on some sort of security system. Let's disable the system.
Yeah.
And so temporarily they split up into two groups so that the three of them can go and disable the system while the others go through the tunnels.
Yeah. So that's Group 2A.
Great news.
Group 2B is composed of
Ian,
Barbara, Ian,
Hunk number one.
Hunk number three and Pussy Hunk.
No, Hunk number three is Pussy Hunk. So it's Hunk number one and
Hunk Hunk, yeah, right. Hunk number one and Pussy Hunk.
This all makes perfect sense to us, ladies and gentlemen. So,
sorry if we're losing you.
So they're in the tunnels, yeah?
Yeah.
They're like Charles Bronson in The Great Escape. They're digging tunnels. So they're in there, and Hunk number three finally reveals his inner wimp by telling Hunk number one, you know what, this is way too dangerous, this is a suicide mission, let's just go back, tell the other Thal that everyone died in a cave-in, and leave them behind. Let's just leave them, they're gonna die.
They do a doctor. Yeah. It's a typical doctor move.
They pull a doctor. Hunk number one grabs hold of Hunk number three's collarless clothing.
Whatever that thing is he's wearing.
His life preserver.
Yeah.
And it goes like, how dare you? How dare you be such a wimp? At which point, ironically, there is an actual cave-in and the way out is blocked. So
Voltaire is in his grave laughing right now.
He's pointing, he's pointing at the hunks.
Going, aha! Anyway.
Yeah, anyway. So now they have to proceed. Meanwhile, the Daleks...
And Pussy Hunk dies.
No, not yet.
Oh, not yet. Sorry.
We're not yet. We're not there yet. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Okay, so in the meantime, the Daleks are up in the city, and they're doing two things. Number one, they're testing the anti-radiation serum on, like, one squadron of Daleks.
And they all died.
They all freaking died. So they now realize there's no way out of, like, this radiation dependency. We need to create more radiation in order to survive.
Just point of interest, why would anti-radiation help the Daleks when they need radiation? surely they should have known that anti-radiation would just kill them quicker.
Because
they need radiation, dude. That's why they want to set off a neutron bomb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. That's the second plan. They want to set off a neutron bomb.
Yeah.
But, so, they tested, the serum on a whole squadron of
Daleks. They
don't
work. The only solution.
Not only are they dying, they're going bonkers. Like, they start just rolling around the place.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good times.
It's not a pretty sight.
It's like poison.
Yeah.
Poison to
them. I'm guessing that the serum, they were hoping that the serum would basically reduce the dependency on radiation.
So it's like a flu inoculation. Give them a little bit of the disease and it will like make them immune.
Basically, yeah, but it doesn't work because they're just so far gone in the mutation.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So plan B is to create a neutron bomb that will...
radiate everywhere.
Exactly, but before they can do that, they need to ask the computer to calculate how long it will take to... build one.
And it's precisely 24 days.
It's precisely... We don't know that yet. So, this is, like, such a freaking cul-de-sac of a subplot, because it makes no sense. It goes nowhere. It is of consequence to literally nothing and nobody. So, it's going to take 24 days, but it doesn't matter. We don't know that yet. In the meantime, the Thal are tunneling, at which point we get another tiny little temporary split-off in the form of Hunk Number One and Barbara... going to just explore, basically. Mm-hmm. And Hunk Number One sees that the way forward is by going down this kind of abyss. And he actually even says, like, allow me to forego one of your Earth customs. Barbara goes, which custom? And he goes, ladies first. Which is why he ties it around, like,
sweet.
He ties a rope around his waist. But and Barbara's meant to...
Obviously, that means that they are in the wrong positions. It really should have been ladies first, because she's going to have to lower him down.
Yeah, and she's not very strong, and she weighs nothing.
He's massive and muscular. Like, he's probably a good 15 stone.
He's a super hunk, and she's a weedy history teacher.
Is she the history teacher?
Yeah.
Oh, is he the science teacher?
Yeah, he's the science teacher.
Okay, fine.
No. Certain gender stereotypes still prevail in this show. So, obviously, the woman is too weak to hold on to the rope trope, and she lets go of the rope, he falls down, first instinct to ask how is Barbara doing, because the others turn up or whatever. Mm-hmm. Everything's fine, though.
Yeah, it's all good.
It's a one-way street of just stupidity. This entire plan is so morbidly dumb, but it's okay. Because it's entertaining. So they carry on. In the meantime, the Doctor and Susan, they've gotten, and Hunk Number Two, they've gotten to the security grid. Hunk Number Two goes, "How is this what you need? Like, can you turn this off?" The Doctor goes, "Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Oh, turn it off. Why don't you go back to the others? Yeah?
Yeah. Except, obviously, as you pointed out, there's a blot hole there. Because, of course, he can't go back to
the others. He can't go back because the place is caved in.
There was the ironic cave in.
Yeah.
which should be blocking him off. But for some reason, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They kind of turn off the system, but not really. Yeah. They get captured.
Yeah.
The Daleks bring them upstairs.
They do, like, disable the system temporarily, I think. And then they get captured.
At the very least, temporarily.
Yeah.
Then they get captured, brought upstairs. The others are still tunneling.
Yeah.
Then they get to the massive abyss.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. So in order to get into the city, they need to cross this abyss. So what they have to do is, Ian and Hunk number one basically draw straws as to who's the bigger hunk and who's going to jump across the abyss with a rope.
Turns out they're equally big hunks.
They're equally big hunks, but Ian wins and he jumps first. He's got a rope tied to him, jumps across the abyss, holds on to literally nothing. He's on like this tiny ledge. Then Hunk number one jumps, is caught by Ian, and like crawls around the corner, and Ian stays behind to like catch the next one.
And all the while, he's still wearing his cardigan.
Oh my god,
his power cardigan.
The power cardi!
Fuck a power tie, power cardi. Anyway.
He is unstoppable with his power cardi. So. Barbara jumps across, Hunk number two jumps across, then it's time for Hunk number Wimp.
Yes. So, he is on the rope, and obviously he's being held by Ian.
Yeah, he jumps across, but he fails to land, is the thing.
And Ian himself is being held by Hunk number
one.
So, yeah, the guy's falling, he's about to die, and now's time for Pussy Hunk to redeem himself.
Not yet, because the episode ends literally on a cliffhanger with Hunk number three hanging by a rope on that is attached to Ian, who in turn is attached to Hunk number one, and Hunk number three weighs so much that if he stays on there, there's no way they can pull him up, and he's going to pull Ian down with him.
Absolutely.
Cliffhanger. Next episode.
Cue the final episode.
Yeah. By the way, can I just point out that this episode was called The Ordeal?
Yeah.
So, just to quote Sick Boy from Trainspotting, what a fucking misnomer. Because unless this episode is named after Barbara, this is so much more than just an ordeal. This thing, it's...
it's long, it's sprawling, it's complicated.
That's what she said. So, whatever. So,
so, where were we?
Next episode, final episode called The Rescue.
Yes. So, we're left on the cliffhanger, and now Pussy Hunk redeems himself.
Oh my god, yes.
He realises that with his super big hunkiness, he's actually pulling everyone down. Ian and Hunk number one. So he does the good thing.
Yeah, he basically pulls a Stuart Wilson from Vertical Limit and cuts himself loose. Yeah.
And kills himself. Like, just, you know... Respect. Like, yeah, it's all forgiven. Everything is forgiven. That whole plot to say everyone was dead.
Hunk number three is going to Thal Heaven because he did a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Turns out just around the corner is the Thal City.
He was really unlucky. Like,
he was so close.
He was so close. Like, to being a hero, and a hero who, well, he was a hero, but a hero who lived.
Yeah.
To tell the tale.
At this point, the Daleks have realised that it's going to take them exactly 24 days to build a neutron bomb, which is too long, because after 500 years...
24 days is too long.
Yeah, that is the final straw. They refuse to wait another day.
Yeah.
So instead, what do they do? It's like the nuclear reactor. They basically just want to release it into the atmosphere and blow it up or something.
Yeah, because it's too long to build a proper one, so they just want to send out what they've got.
Yeah. Essentially, and like just irradiate the entire atmosphere.
Ham fist it and just radiate everything.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah.
This thing is going to get x-rayed to shit.
Yes.
So, they put a countdown on it.
Yeah, they put a countdown on it of approximately 15 and a half seconds.
No. I heard the number 48.
Right.
So I'm guessing it was like the Daleks were like, which number should we choose? We don't need a countdown, but let's have one anyway. They can literally just push a button and release the radiation, but it seems to me
in the 60s, and you know, this is James Bond included.
Yeah, you need a countdown.
Well, you can't do anything without waiting a certain designated period. Yeah. So, like, for example, when Sean Connery's like lying on the table with Blofeld, who's like just gonna cut him in half with a laser.
Yeah.
It takes time. You can't just shine the laser on somebody.
Like, it needs to warm up or something, so it needs to like come in between his legs and start going for his crotch.
Yeah,
like,
there's
a little delay. Things weren't so fast in the 60s.
There's also like that necessity to include dramatic effect. It's like, yeah. Like, we can't just shoot him in the face. We have to slowly lower him into the pool of piranhas.
Yeah. Or burning lava, or whatever.
Insert dangerous item here.
Yeah.
So that is basically what the Daleks are doing. They're like, we're gonna include let's include a countdown which number signifies stupidity to us. 247.
It's not as long as 247.
No,
it's like 40 seconds. Yeah, a minute.
Yeah. So
they're not that dumb.
No. Hunks 1 and 2 and Ian and Barbara are now inside the city. So like ridiculously complicated. But clearly, at this point, by the way, the show has a fantastic budget because this story is so freaking exciting. It is seriously exciting. Whereas the first one was kind of boring.
Well, I didn't think it was boring at all. But it was slow and suspenseful. This one's like action.
Well, I'm going to say it was slow.
I enjoyed the first one. Let's get off episode one.
But this is fantastic. Okay, so the Doctor and Susan are kidnapped. They're still being held captive. They now know exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, the radiation is going to be released. Hunk 1 and 2 and Ian and Barbara are inside the city. A door comes down, almost cuts Barbara in half.
But as we discussed when we were watching it, it's a safety door.
It's a safety door, probably.
Because, you know, 247 is so stupid. Like, he often gets caught in the door. I don't want him crushed.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes sense. They've got a safety door. It's like the tubes on the London Underground. You know, if something gets caught in there, it stops. It only makes sense. Daleks are geniuses. They wouldn't make a door that just crushed things,
you know,
that tried to get through.
They had that door ridiculously soft and weak just to mock him. Let's have the doors really weak. Let's make 247 feel really bad about being such a weakling. So she's trapped under the door. It's fine. Hunks 1 and Ian, they rescue her. They converge on the Daleks.
Yeah.
We are so close to the end of this episode now, ladies and gentlemen.
We're all sorry.
They converge on the Daleks. The countdown is still going, and it stops at 4.
It doesn't just stop at 4. It's temporary delayed at 4. Like, it's... It stops at 4 for no apparent reason. Just to give them 10 seconds.
to beat
the Daleks.
More like 2 minutes. While they wrestle with the Daleks, the Doctor disables the radiation wibbly-wobbly thing.
Yeah.
And along with it, all of the Daleks.
They don't die, they become weak.
At the very least, they're disabled.
They're disabled.
Like, at the very least,
they're unable to use their... I mean, it might be a callback to earlier when, you know, when they magnetized or de-statified the floor.
It's possible.
Right at the start, when Ian couldn't get out.
To be honest, I'm not sure what
they did.
I don't know what he did.
That's what they did.
The thing is, like, they have no idea that there's a bomb there, that there's a nuclear weapon there, but they totally know exactly how and when to disable it.
Suffice it to say, they manage to incapacitate the Daleks.
Yeah. And that's fine. Everything's fine
and
dandy.
Yeah,
let's go back to the TARDIS.
Yep.
Let's go back to the TARDIS. The Doctor gets his samples, his soil samples.
Yep. He's very happy with them. He reviews a bit of Thal history, and it's like amazing.
He has 500,000 years of recorded Thal history.
And it takes him, what, 30 seconds?
No, the Thal give him, like, all these old-school
reels
of information.
They've got no projectors, but they have reels.
They live in a petrified forest, but they've got, like, a DIA projector. It's okay.
It's not even written on a tablet. It's on, like, a film roll. Like one of those old Kodak cameras.
And here's another wonderful thing. The Doctor tells Hunk number 1 or 2, I think, like, I've looked at your soil samples. It turns out it's very fruitful, and I wouldn't be surprised if in your lifetime you will hear birds singing and flying around in the air.
Where are the birds?
Is he going to plant birds?
So, about 50 years later in Doctor Who, it's revealed to us that most bees are aliens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Tennant says it.
Yeah.
So, maybe they could get bees in their forest at some point, because bees can travel through space. But birds? Nobody's mentioned about birds.
So good.
It was very good, the David Tennant one, because bees were actually disappearing in the UK at that time. It was very topical.
Hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So, episode conclusion, they go back into the TARDIS, but before Barbara goes in, she has the lovey-dovey moment with hunk number one, who's...
a proper kiss. Like, the best you could do on a children's TV show for a snog.
Yeah, and not just that, it's her kiss. Like, he kisses her hand, and...
she goes in.
She goes in and kisses him on the lips, and then goes into the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Which, hunk number two walks up to hunk number one, it's like, hey, wouldn't you want to tap that?
And I don't know how Ian feels about this. I mean, there's this weird, for me, there's this weird sexual chemistry going on between Ian.
Absolutely. There's like she is irresistibly drawn to his cardi and he just wants
They're like an old married couple, but they're not together.
No. Well, not yet anyway.
But I think, like, I've got a feeling he's eventually going to want to tap that.
I think, absolutely. But to the best of our knowledge, he did not see her kiss hunk number one.
No, he was already inside the TARDIS.
Exactly. So this is like her little secret.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, good for her. Good for you, Barbara.
Everything's fine and dandy. Thals are happy. They go into the TARDIS.
Yeah. And they fly off, basically.
They fly off, and we get a little preview of where they go next.
I cannot remember, to be honest.
Normally do.
Shall we have a look?
Shall we have a look?
Let's have a super quick look.
Live in action. We're going to have a look. Do we get told where they're going next?
Let's fast forward to the end.
Because the next one, I mean, let's not spoil the next one, but it's a bottle episode.
It's a bottle episode. We're
going
to have some...
may not be going
yes.
Anywhere.
We have a premonition that what we see the beginning of the next episode, not where they're going, but we see that the TARDIS crashes.
Do you know what? This next episode that's coming, The Edge of Destruction,
yeah.
I really urge you to listen to the next podcast. I think this whole project, the whole 5 years we're putting aside, is worth it just to discuss The Edge of Destruction. It is one of the maddest things you will ever see.
The Edge of Destruction is basically the Spock's brain of Doctor Who. It is fantastically bad.
It's like, it's not even just, it's just bizarre. Like, it's inhuman.
Oh my God.
It's as though a non-human wrote it. Like, really, it's tune in.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Like, if you're going to watch one old Doctor Who and want to have a good crack, watch The Edge of Destruction.
anyway,
ratings for episode.
Ratings for episode two.
Who went first last time?
You went first last time.
Okay, it's up to you, sir.
You know what? I freaking loved this episode. Yeah. I think it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just amazing in the sense that it was very exciting. It was maybe not well edited, but it was super well structured. Like, yes. Super well structured, right? Yeah. In fact, it had great cinematography in some pieces. Cinematography that actually, like, now you see films and you go, oh, wait, hang on, that's not a new trick, that's an old trick. Like, you have, for instance, you have the shot of Ian from the point of view of a CCTV camera taking out the camera.
Mm.
That is pretty cool.
It is very good.
Yeah. So, technically, it's well made. The Daleks are awesome. We get to meet them for the first time. The Thals are beautiful. The story is super convoluted but very exciting. Much more complex than the pilot. You know what? Bonus point for Whirlpool Death. I'm going to give this episode... I'm going to give it a 4.3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good mark. Good mark.
All right. Well, what about you?
So... what I'd like to say about this episode, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think it's a fantastically exciting episode. It's mm-hmm. faster paced than the first one, and you know it's kind of what you'd expect out of the second episode of the series. First episode set up, second one. Now we're really going in.
They've totally upped the game.
I'm so happy we met the new characters that we did. I think it's a great introduction to the Daleks.
Yeah.
Like you see a bit, like funnily enough, the human side of the Daleks. You see where they're coming from a little bit. Like it's really good context. As a new Doctor Who viewer, it's great context on the Daleks. I really enjoyed their introduction. And as you say, the Thals are just buff. Like, women and men.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, they're Hitler's master race.
don't say that.
Don't say that. Okay, maybe not Hitler's, because they're very unmilitarized. Okay, they're of a lovely, big, hunk Nordic stock. So I would be giving this episode a super high mark, but I've got to be honest.
Okay.
With all the tiny little intricacies of their journey,
yeah.
I've got to say, and when we were discussing it, I was a little bit hazy.
Mm.
I think that was because when I was watching it, my brain just kind of glazed it. It was like, I can't actually be bothered with all of these little intricacies. Like, and they're not going anywhere. As we said, they're cul-de-sacs of reason.
Yeah.
And I did glaze over it a little bit. And I think ultimately... the way the Daleks get got isn't as fulfilling as it could have been.
That's true.
Because even when we were describing it, it's not like a big moment. Like, I liked lots of things about this episode, but I'm not sure I'm as heavy on it as you are.
Okay. And
for that reason,
yeah.
With all deductions taken into account, I'm going to give it a 4.0.
4.0?
Yeah. So I think it's just about better than the first one.
Wow.
I think
this is so much better than the first one.
I think the first one's better constructed.
Oh, my God!
As a drama. Yeah.
Oh, I totally agree.
It's a bit too convoluted. I think it's great. Like, I love the characters. I love the space and time I'm in. Like, I really enjoy being there. So I want to give it a high mark. And a 4 is a super high mark, but I've got to deduct points for just like bafflement.
Yeah.
Like,
okay, fine.
I disagree
sure.
about the structure. I'm not sure. I think the structure is what lets it down.
All right.
And is why it's not a high.
Dude, mark. You're entitled to your own opinion. I
of
think this was a.
I'm trying to explain to you. I'm trying to explain to you why I've downgraded it to a 4.0.
Okay,
fair. 4.0 is a great mark. That's a great episode.
It is
I'm
a great
saying
episode.
It's a great episode.
Yeah, no, 4.0 is not bad at all.
So, but I have to deduct marks.
Sure. I'm fair sorry. Enough. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Who Back When.
We've had quite a time.
We've had a good time watching this one.
We've gotten very confused and we've, you know, gone out into different parts of space-time. But I hope we arrived at a satisfying conclusion.
Yeah. Check out whobackwhen.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to us on iTunes and rate us and review us and whatever.
Basically, go out of your way to do everything you can to help these episodes continue. Like, we don't need monetary funding, but we need love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would go a long way. And you know what?
Actually,
for all we
to
know...
To be honest, we don't need love. Nobody could ever listen to this. We'd still make them.
yeah, we still would.
We would.
We've got enough love for Doctor Who, so it's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
But for all we know, the people out in podcast land are listening to this way in the future when we've gone through like 3 or 4 Doctors already.
Well, actually, what I'm kind of hoping is there'll be a nuclear apocalypse and like...
This is the only record
of humanity. This is the only record they have from the year 2013. Can nice. You imagine how much that's going to shit them up? Like, if this is all they've got to go, they're going to try and reconstruct our society from our podcast about 1963 Doctor Who. Wicked. Anyway, on that note.
Yeah. Rock on and cha-chao.
Sayonara. I'm going to end every episode with a different phrase.
I'm just glad you didn't nick one of mine. Yeah, catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Back when.